sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, Big Ten Network, in just a few moments to talk about what the NCAA did with college basketball yesterday. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Another big night for Chris Davis and the Oakland A's.
And the 2-2 once again is swung on tap to third. Machado's got it, play at the plate, the throw and the tag out at the plate. Now he called him safe, I think. He called him safe, and Simeon has scored, and the A's take the lead. Machado, the play to the plate, on a tapper to third, hit by Chris Davis. Machado fired to the plate. It looked to me initially that the plate umpire Malinsky ruled out Machado throwing, and he ruled him out, but the ball got away. Watching the replay, the ball was dropped at home plate, and that's what happened as Grandal bobbled the ball, and once it hit the dirt, that's when Malinsky, the plate umpire, said safe, and that's how the A's take a 3-2 lead in the bottom half of the eighth inning.
And the A's keep winning. They beat the Dodgers last night. We'll give you one other baseball note before we get to basketball. Mike DeCourcy, as Sunbury's Nick Dunn has been named to the New York Penn League All-Star Game, which will be played next Tuesday here at Medler Field at Lebrano Park. So Nick Dunn, Shikellamy High School's own, making the New York Penn League All-Star Game in his rookie season. All right, let's get to Mike DeCourcy. A lot happened yesterday. The NCAA made announcements, and in the end, when you really read it, I walked away and went, a lot of meh. Mike, welcome. It's always great to hear you.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. I hope you're doing well.
All right. I'm doing fine.
Okay. There are approximately 4,500 Division I college basketball players.
Right.
I felt when yesterday was all said and done, what they talked about affected 15 to 20.
I don't know that that's, you know, I don't know that's 100% true. I mean, for instance, the eventual adoption of the rule that will allow players to have agents as they enter the draft process. Well, we had like 180 guys or 160.
Right.
Somewhere. You never know exactly because they throw the internationals all in one pile.
Sure.
So you don't know. But it's well north of 100 guys that enter the draft. And so they will. Whereas before, once a player was declared he had an agent, that meant he was turning professional
right.
for good.
Right.
Now that's not the case. But so it'll affect a lot of guys. But here's where the problem is. In creating the rule so that Mike DeCourcy, superstar point guard, can enter the draft and get an agent and then look at things and then decide whether to come back, the agent, Steve Jones, is going to tell me, well, yeah, you're ready to go.
Absolutely.
Of course. And the reason is because if I don't go, then my relationship with Steve Jones is terminated.
Right.
It's over.
And I'm not going to get my percentage because you did.
Right. And then a year from now, maybe I'm better and maybe I'm a better candidate and maybe you get me back, but maybe you don't. So you're going to want me now. So it's really a incredibly badly written rule. And I can't believe that intelligent people signed off on it.
Well, I agree with you on the 180. My point about the 15 to 20 is this. There's a lot of the one-and-dones, so let's just throw that in the neighborhood of 10 in a given
right.
year. And then those who go to the combine that can go back to college, numbered seven this year. Seven.
Five. I thought I had five, but...
I was trying to go through. I thought I counted seven, but
okay.
Either way, you and I are in the same neighborhood. How about that?
That's right.
Good enough. And you and I both know they're going to go to the NBA summer camp anyway. They're not going back to school.
Yeah, I don't. I clearly believe that, you know, there are still people that's trying to, you know, get excited about. Well, what if a guy doesn't have a skull? Oh, come. I mean, why are you wasting your time on that? I mean, you're way into the weeds. It has. There aren't going to be any players that take advantage of that rule.
That's right.
But they wrote it so that there wouldn't be anybody who could or would want to. If you had the guys who went into the draft delusionally for whatever reason and then weren't selected, and then they looked around and said, oh man, did I screw up? And then you wanted that guy to be able to come back? Well, now he can't because, you know, he doesn't have the option. He can only come back if he's been through the combine. Well,
that's
the delusional
right.
kid didn't get invited to the combine. They had this before, I'm going to say roughly 20 years ago. And in the time that they had it, I only remember one player going back to college. It was a young man named Bobby Brown, and mm-hmm. Bobby yeah. went, I believe, was at Cal State Fullerton.
Yes.
And he had a nice senior year, and then he went and had a really long pro career overseas, and he then ultimately played for USA Basketball in the world I believe the World University Games or the Pan American Games, excuse me. He played for them a couple of years ago in the Pan American Games. And so, you know, he had a nice – so no harm, no foul. So why can we not have that? Well, because a bunch of college coaches worried that this would inconvenience them, so they stripped the heart out of the rule.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And there's another part to it, too. You and I both know, going back to school, the NBA is different than the NFL. You might be able to sit back and say, you know what, I'm not going to go to the NFL draft because right now they're saying I might be a fourth or fifth round pick, but I might be able to get to be a three next year if I stay another year and develop. Okay, that's possible. You and I both know that doesn't happen with the NBA. There are 60 spots. Miles Bridges was slotted in the same spot he was a year ago, and he's a really good player.
Well, you know, where I would dissent from that is that I've seen guys that have built themselves up into better prospects. I mean, Frank Kaminsky,
yeah.
Buddy Hield,
yeah.
Denzel Valentine a few years ago, you know, all built themselves up into better prospects and better draft positions by staying an extra year, and even though that meant being seniors. So I do think that can happen. And again, you know, if Denzel Valentine's in the draft, next year or 2 years from now, after, you know, or whenever, and he gets an agent, and then the agent's going to say, oh, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And then Denzel Valentine's probably a second-round pick instead
right.
of a first-round pick, and with the guaranteed money he got.
Right.
That's where I see the real problems entering into this and why I'm so frustrated that the NCAA chose to rush through this process. They wanted major changes, which they ultimately didn't really get, but they wanted major changes, but they wanted them fast. And when the NCAA does things quickly,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that I don't think I need any better audience than the people I'm speaking to now,
mm-hmm.
when the NCAA does things quickly, they generally do them wrong.
Yeah. When you get into certain situations, people like to assign black hat, white hat, bad guy. Apparel companies, and because of the FBI case, you feel like they've been assigned the black hat. You feel like the AAU has been assigned a black hat. Mike, what's the reality, though? I mean, as to what the AAU and the apparel companies do, what's the reality to you as to what they really are?
Well, I think that, first of all, you have to remember all the apparel companies are not the same. I mean, they all don't do the same exact things. They may have some of the same exact programs, like their summer basketball.
Right.
But they don't necessarily follow the same course in all those. And so I wouldn't want to paint them with a broad brush. But, you know, summer basketball as an enterprise is about 9% positive. It's a good thing for the young people that play it. It's, you know, first of all, athletics would generally be considered a positive activity. You know, they're doing healthy things. They're hanging out with good friends. They're going to interesting places like Orlando, Las Vegas, things like that. So they're seeing part of the other parts of the country that when I was 17, I wasn't privileged. That's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then occasionally you get guys who are involved who are not necessarily the best people.
That's
some,
right.
Occasionally.
That's exactly
but
right.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal, Steve. There are sp- sports writers and talk show hosts and college basketball coaches and high school basketball coaches and teachers and doctors and lawyers who a small percentage of them fall into the category of not the best people.
Right.
It's impossible to legislate against that. It's impossible.
Yeah.
They have decided that because it looks like it, because you can sell the idea that scholastic coaches, high school coaches, are you know, inherently superior to summer coaches. Well, in a lot of instances, they may be better coaches. In a lot of them, they might not. But they certainly aren't universally better people. I mean, so this dichotomy that they're trying to create, it's false. You can't categorize one group as superior to the other simply because of the venue in which they coach.
And again, the only criticism I've really had of AAU, the only criticism I had is that, you know, you've got guys trying to play a style with a coach they're not quite familiar with, whatever. And of course, they're trying to show off for college coaches, so they're trying to show exactly what they can do. So they're not playing usually a team style. So it's, sometimes you have to break them of habits over time. That's it. Other than that, the one stop shopping part of it, where coaches can go and see a lot of prospects at once, is a good thing.
I will tell you though, Steve, over the last 8 to 10 years, I'm going to say, whenever the Nike began the EYBL concept, it's gotten a lot better in that regard.
Yes, it has.
It really has. The team concept has gotten much better. Now, they don't practice as much together as a high school team does, certainly. They don't play as much together as a high school team does. So they're not going to get the same fluidity and that sort of thing.
Right.
But what you don't get in the AAU that you get in high school is, you know, four non-prospects, you know, maybe a football player and a track guy and a couple of guys that are just going to play in high school, and then a superstar, and so you don't get the same sort of function that you would get in an AAU setting where everybody on that superstar's team is also a high level prospect. So they play more naturally together. They fit better together. They belong together in the sense that, you know, their talents complement each other. And so, there are positives and negatives to both.
That's right.
It's one of the great situations of American basketball is that we have both. American basketball has grown in its ability to create the world's best prospect in the era that's been the most decried. Everybody complains about grassroots AAU basketball, whatever you want to call it, but we're turning out a greater percentage of great players in the last 10 or 12 years than we did before this thing really took off.
And my point in this line that we've been talking about is that it's been so easy to paint certain areas with a broad brush to assign blame someplace that it's not completely accurate.
Absolutely, Steve. And, you know, and that's what they engaged in a lot of this. And I'll tell you that when I talked before about them going too fast, they didn't talk to the right people and they didn't talk to enough people, the Rice Commission. And the perfect example of that is I spoke with every major recruiting analyst in the country pretty much. Except for Paul Biancardi, because I just didn't happen to run into Paul at any of the events I was at. And I said, I asked every single one, were you brought in before the Rice Commission? And everyone said no. And I'm telling you, they would have been the literal first people I would have called if I asked by the Rice Commission or if I were a member. I said, these are the people you have to talk to first, because they know everything.
Right.
They know all the coaches, all the players, all the guys are hanging on. They know everybody. They know all of what's good, all of what's bad. You got to talk to them. They didn't talk to any of them. How can you do that? How can you not ask the people who know?
Well, you got to get the people that are in the trenches all the time. People in the trenches are the ones that know where everything is.
Brian Snow lives here in Indianapolis, where I live. Obviously, right. We're here in the same headquarters, same city as the headquarters of the NCAA. Brian could have taken a car down there. You know, maybe they would have had to pay his parking, right?
Right.
And that was it. Yeah. It would have cost them anything. And he could have sat there, and he would have, because we talked about it. He would have gladly sat there and said, "Okay, here's what the problems are. Here's what the good things are. Deal with it." And they chose not to investigate that, and that really bothered me, Steve, because these were smart, educated, talented people. They were assigned a task that they were asked to do too quickly, and that they weren't equipped to do. Not enough basketball people on there, and unfortunately, they did a poor job of putting that work together, and then their work was further undermined by the committees that were asked to put those things into place.
And I'm pretty confident they would have validated parking. So
I think they would have. I think they could have managed that.
I think they would have validated parking. Mike, I know I asked you this the last time, but I'm gonna ask the question again. If they had the opportunity to sit down with you, for example, and say, "Okay, Mike, what do you like about this? What should be maybe not changed but tweaked that could make it better?" What would you tell them?
Well, I think that the first problem they have is simple economics.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to go to abandoning the amateurism concept, I think they still have to liberate it a little. And that would start with allowing agents to have financial relationships with athletes, because it's already being done, and it's clear that it's being done fairly actively. If you read the Yahoo story that made such a splash in late February, there were more than 20 players over the previous couple of years, and right. Most of those players were pretty well known, and almost none of them were one and done players. They were all regular college players. Some of them 4-year guys. Some of them 4-year guys who didn't even get drafted.
Right.
And honestly, that sounds like a worthless pursuit. And I don't know whether the player eventually signed with that particular agent or not. But the player I mentioned, the 4-year player who didn't get drafted, was a regular on a playoff team this past year.
Right.
So there is value in that player. It's not just in the guy who's going to be, who's an obvious first 5 pick, who's obviously going to be that as early as his sophomore or junior year in high school. There's value in that guy who came through a mid-major school and was marginally recruited and then plays 4 years and doesn't get drafted. He can still be a significant NBA player, and there's so much money in that. And that's why the agents will do, and some agents will do almost anything to secure those clients. So you have to bring that above board. If you don't bring that above board, and they chose not to do that, if you don't bring that fully above board, then you're wasting your time.
Right. How do you feel about likeness?
Well, again, it's another thing that I just don't see how they don't. I'd like to see a structure that would limit or eliminate the idea of I've got the best car dealership, so I'm going to have the best quarterback,
right,
so to speak.
And that we've talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That I don't want college athletics to be that. I do think there should be some money in it for the athletes relative to that. From video games, from jersey sales, maybe even the opportunity to do autograph shows, those sorts of things. If you have to run that money through an account that's not available until you graduate or till you complete 4 years or something like that, those are the kinds of things I'd like to see proposed and discussed so that they can find something that's fair and reasonable. But I think that the problem in getting to that point now is that a lot of that's tied up in court. And when the NCAA moved without court prompting to do the cost of attendance payments, which was the right thing to do.
Yes.
Then people came around on the back end of that, filed a suit, and wound up with $200-some million. And so the NCAA is not in any hurry to circumvent the court on this one. I think they want whatever comes out of the courts on this to be final, and then they can make some legislation going forward.
Yeah, well, I think what you want to avoid when you talk about likeness, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, I said, if it's $5,000 to have your likeness used for anybody to do a car ad, and the athlete gets $1 million, something not quite
right.
Yeah, this is for the local car dealership, not national. That's where you're like, okay, wait a minute, we have to look at this closer.
And given the amount of money that been exchanged in some of the deals that, you know, some booster type deals that we know have occurred in the past, we know that's possible. Maybe not a million, but several hundred thousand has been exchanged in some of those circumstances. So I do think, you know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't get several hundred thousand necessarily. I'm saying that it shouldn't be about, you know, my university has a car dealer who will do anything for you, and theirs doesn't, so come play for me. I don't want to see college right. athletics become that.
Exactly. Mike, it's always a pleasure. It's a lot of fun having you on. Thanks for the opinions and the insight.
Thank you, Steve.
Mike DeCourcy, BTN Sporting News. Audrey Snyder, next half hour from The Athletic on Penn State Football and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Sunbury Motors Kia is getting aggressive in August with 22 under 20 grand. Sunbury Motors Kia is getting aggressive on prices with 22 brand new Kias priced under $20,000. Choose from 2018 Kia Fortes, Souls, Rios, Optimus, even some 2019 models.
These models won't last long.
Sunbury Motors Kia has 2018 Kia SUVs under 30 grand, plus 0% for up to 72 months available on many models. And get Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty. Have a trade? They're aggressive there, too. Paying you top dollar for your trade. SMC is getting aggressive in August and purging their 2018 inventory now. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Tax and tags extra, 0% financing, well qualified customers through KMN. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
So,
taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Practice number 6 today for Penn State football. In fact, they're about to go out and do some walkthrough for practice, and then they're going to get rolling about 45 minutes from now. And Jack and I will both be there today. Yesterday, they had practice number 5, and there was a media availability at the end of it. And Audrey Snyder from The Athletic joins us. Audrey, welcome. Great to have you back.
Great to be here, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What were your impressions of the opportunity you had to watch yesterday and then the press conference itself?
You know, Steve, I thought it was a good little glimpse behind the scenes of what's happening over there. And I think, you know, one of the things that maybe the general public kind of forgets is that, you know, we get a 15-minute or so window once a week to see camp, to see practice during the season. So you can only see so much. But one of the things I thought, you look at the offensive line last night, and you know, this has really been one of those things that I think has gone a little bit under the radar this offseason, but Connor McGovern moving back to right guard, Penn State inserting Michael Mennett at center. We saw that last night. James Franklin spoke about that afterward and, you know, how they think that move works best for both guys' skill sets. So we got to see that a little bit. Chaz Wright was working at right tackle. Again, I don't think that position at least is far from a given with both Fries in there. But just a little bit of what we saw. And, hey, Ellison Jordan was out there working his way back a little bit. He, of course, was hurt ahead of the Fiesta Bowl. So you look at the defensive tackles, and these guys are starting to answer some questions on both sides of the ball, which I think, you know, almost a week into camp, that's what you want to hear, what you want to see. But I think we definitely got to see a few glimpses of them answering those questions last night.
And in one of the answers last night, he wasn't asked about it. He volunteered some information about Manny Bone.
Right. So that Manny Bone's having a really good camp. Now this comes just, you know, a few days after media day last week where Brent Pry and James Franklin both said they have no idea how this thing's going to play out with Manny Bone. I think you can read into that however you want. I mean, I would be very surprised if Manny Bowen is not on the field within, you know, the first 3 or 4 weeks of this season and a starter by the time Big Ten play opens. I mean, I think their needs at linebacker are so great, and the fact that you always hear them say that they're box linebackers, meaning Mike and the Will are interchangeable, to me that would say, okay, you know, Jan Johnson, who Franklin also said has been doing well, it's a good comfort level with him as middle linebacker, but I think Manny Bowen could be that guy long term. So really curious to see how it shakes out for Bowen, but I didn't see him out there on the field last night. Again, small viewing window, so take it for what it's worth.
In the viewing windows that you get, do you go in with a preconceived plan, Audrey, as to what you want to see and then try to zero in on it, or is it catch as catch can for you as to how you go about observing?
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, I always have a plan for this kind of thing, Steve. I think I maybe overthink it just because you never know what we're going to see, right? I mean, the last night, I think, was the latest we've ever gotten into a practice. It was probably about 7:15. But then we did get a nice little extended look. But going into that, I was curious to see the linebacker specifically where Bowen was, which is why I then kind of say, hey, I didn't see him out there. To look at this offensive line a little bit, and we got a good glimpse. Now, again, the kickers are broken up into groups, which is what special teams coordinator Phil Galliano wanted to do to get these guys more live reps. So we got a little bit of a glimpse there of the kickers, two of them at least, and it was promising. I mean, the guys combined to go 9 of 10, but again, small sample size. It's only two of their four freshman kickers, but James Franklin did say that these kickers are having a nice camp.
Anything else of substance, in your opinion, that came out of the press gathering after? We hit on like three or four of them already. Was there anything else?
Mm-hmm. My ears still ringing, Steve, from when he was yelling at players to jog off the field. You know, I think James Franklin is one of those guys that every coach is a stickler for details, but I think the man might have eyes in the back of his head, because we've seen this so many times where, you know, he might spot a guy 30, 40 yards away, he's walking off and screaming for him to jog off, and of course we saw that last night. We've seen that before in spring practices. Last night this wasn't the case, but I've seen it before where he's had his back to players as they walk off and still turns around and yells at them to jog off the field. But all these little details are adding up, and that's something, going back to conversations with guys this summer on the team about, you know, all the little details adding up, and what do you have to do differently to get over that hump and to get into the college football playoff. I think last night was just a tiny example of that, of, hey, jog off the field, stay after work, do extra work, all those sorts of things. So a little bit of insight there as well.
Media day was last Saturday, so you had a chance to at least go around and talk with individuals. Which individuals did you end up speaking with, and was there something of note to you that you found interesting that maybe you had not known before?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think. I made my rounds, Steve. Definitely chatted with Sean Spencer for a bit, with Tyler Bowen, with Gary Smith, Shaka Tony, Lamont Wade. Who the heck else? Mark Allen, Miles Sanders. It was a long list, kind of bounced around. Had a bunch of story ideas in mind. I think you go in with these plans and these ideas, but one of the things is you start to hear little pieces of information from people, and you say, okay, you watch how this defensive line interacts with each other, and while there are some question marks along that interior, you see these guys joking around in between interviews, they're all over each other, just having a really good time, busting on each other, that kind of thing. And I think you can then take that and say, you know what, okay, these guys, they're loose, right? They're not worried. Whatever we have to say, I thought it was interesting talking to Cam Brown. He had mentioned, which Brent Pryor said as well, they have five quotes plastered in the meeting room for the defense about, you know, the defense being the question mark, the linebackers being the biggest question on this team. And Cam Brown said to me something to the effect of, yeah, you guys can say whatever you want. We know what we have. So I think, you know, the confidence isn't lacking there. You go around, you talk to these guys, you pick up on little things like that. A lot of the stuff I gathered last week, I will be rolling out next week and some different features and things like that. But yeah, there's a lot. And Shaka Tony, I always think Steve is one of the more interesting guys to talk to. Interesting perspective. He was telling me when he got here, he was 170 pounds. And now, of course, right, he continues putting on weight. Made some big gains this summer. I had a bunch of PRs in the weight room, so I'll have a story on him next week. But again, this is another guy who, you look at it, and this is another element to the defense when having.
All right. I would sincerely hope that on that list of guys that Mark Allen went last, because that would at least, because if he went first, you'd never get a chance to talk to the other guys. I've always kidded Allen. I said, you're the only guy out here that talks more than I do.
Right. He's a great interview, Steve, and that's why I want the story I'm doing on him and kind of his role on the team and just a great personality.
He's also a kind of veteran guy that's also like pulls guys aside and puts them under his wing. I mean, he's been here a while. Audrey cares about the program. He cares about the guys that are with him positionally too. He checks whatever ego in at the door and says, hey, look, you need to do this better, and he helps him.
And I thought, too, Steve, you look at, and Jonathan Thomas and James Franklin said it, I talked to Thomas about it afterwards, that Thomas guaranteed that these running backs are going to put up numbers that were as good as Saquon Barkley's last year or collectively better than that. And I thought that was a really telling comment and asked, well, I was over there talking to Mark Allen and Miles Sanders and Jonathan Thomas and asked them about that. And Thomas said, with a lot of sincerity, that he genuinely believes that this collection of talent in the running back room can, impact. And you look at a guy like Jordy Brown, Ricky Slade had a nice run right as we got into practice last night. So there's a guy, could factor in too. So a lot of little pieces of information that are kind of starting to weave together, Steve.
Obviously, by the time you get to the third season of what's going on, it doesn't really matter who recruited the players. They're all your players anyway. Mm-hmm. But does it make a difference that, the fifth-year guys were originally recruited by Bill O'Brien? Some of them, like DeAndre Tompkins, he was recruited by Bill. But every second he's been coached here has been by James Franklin. How much do you think that helps his program now that everybody has heard the same voice for 5 years?
I think it's huge. I mean, there's that consistency. There's the fact that the message, which we always hear so much about, the message starts at the top, and that hasn't changed. And when you see programs, they go through transitions, every little thing changes because every coach is going to want to leave their mark, leave their imprint on a program. But now that these guys have heard the same thing, and then you even go, you look at the coordinator change, and it's a change from Joe Moorhead to Ricky Ronnie, but it's really not because these guys have been around Ricky Ronnie since they've been here. He's the guy who recruited Trace McSorley, who believed in Trace McSorley as a quarterback when a lot of other schools didn't and thought he was a safety. All of that, I think, really gives you a good rapport between players and coaches and just the consistency of the message. I think, Steve, that's one of the biggest, maybe more under-the-radar things that this program has going for it, is that you've had a lot of continuity, and when you've had coaching changes, and you even look at it this offseason, you have Tyler Bowen, but Tyler Bowen knew a lot of these guys from when he was here as a GA, so you're bringing in some new faces, but at the end of the day, they're not always all that new.
When Terry Smith had his media availability last night, did he discuss at all what it means for his DBs to face Trace McSorley every day in practice and what it can do for them?
Mm-hmm. Steve, I was at Juwan Johnson during the rapid fire session last night where they were all going, so I haven't listened to my audio just yet. It's on today's docket. But I did talk with Terry at Media Day last Saturday, which is part of the reason why I went to talk with Juwan Johnson. But that was something that has come up, and talking with Amani Oruorie about it, a lot of these guys on the defense, they said, this makes them better. They know, and especially I think you look at a guy like Cole Farmer and Oruorie, they're very close friends with Trace McSorley, too. And so there's that competitive juices. They get flowing out there, and it's kind of like, hey, I'm going to get the best of you. No, I'm going to get the best of you type of thing. And I think that means a heck of a lot. Now, at this point in camp, with the way installs work, and James Franklin has talked a lot about that, it's not a free-for-all just yet with all kinds of madness. But give them a couple weeks, and they'll get there. But absolutely, you're going against one of the best quarterbacks in college football, maybe the best college football quarterback this year, certainly has an impact on this defense.
Audrey, it's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for your time.
You got it, Steve. Take care.
Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
In Pennsylvania.
All right. right, wrapping it up for today, our thanks to Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, Big Ten Network, for joining us today. Jonathan Alexander, News and Observer, Raleigh, North Carolina. And last but not least, Audrey Snyder from The Athletic on Penn State football. You can check out, if you missed anything, on the Steve Jones Show podcast. The Phillies lost 2 out of 3 to the D-backs. The Phillies are off tonight. And the Pirates will be taking on the Giants tonight at AT&T Park this evening. Major League Baseball right now. Nationals beat Atlanta 6-3. Milwaukee leads San Diego 4-2. Top of the ninth at Miller Park. Indians won over the Twins 5-4. Texas and the Yankees tonight in the Bronx. Baltimore is at Tampa Bay. Seattle at Houston. The Dodgers at Colorado. Pirates at San Francisco. And the Red Sox will be at Toronto. A 500 par 65 today for Ricky Fowler. And Fowler has the lead right now at the PGA. Even par 70 today for Tiger Woods. He is 5 shots back. So that's where he is. Tiger got off to a bad start, then to his credit, bounced back today. But there are others that also play well. I mean, Justin Thomas, the defending champion, played well, and it's all that occurred today. Jason Wirth, in an interview with Howard Eskin on WIP, was asked, well, I don't know if he was directly asked about, but he was discussing analytics. It's fine. We've talked about analytics before. And as you know, I've said, look, the more information, the merrier, but allow us as broadcasters and professionals who have been around the game to use it when it's appropriate and eliminate stuff that we don't think fits. You know, I'm not going to just sit there and talk about apex and exit velocity and things like that if it doesn't matter to the play. It may be of interest in terms of distance a ball went. No offense, but I mean, it doesn't really matter to me if the ball's hit 105 or 108. If the ball clears the fence, it is called a home run. What I found interesting, and I'll give you Worth's exact comments here. He says, super nerds are killing Major League Baseball. Okay. Now, Worth, of course, helped the Phillies win the World Series in 2008. Then he went to the Nationals. He says, when they come down, these kids from MIT or Stanford or Harvard, wherever they're from, they've never played baseball in their life, Worth told Eskin. When they come down to talk about this stuff like shifts, and then I look at them and I say, well, should I bunt over there? And they're like, no, don't do that. You don't want to do that. We want you to hit a homer. Well, that's not baseball to me. We're creating something that's not fun to watch. It is boring. You're turning players into robots. They're taking the human element out of the game. Now, of course, remember, Goose Gossage did the same thing 2 years ago. He said, the game is becoming a freaking joke because of the nerds who are running it. I'll tell you what has happened. These guys play rotisserie baseball at Harvard or wherever the F they went. And they thought they figured the effing game out. They don't know. Yeah, I think you can fill in the blank at that point. Oh, goodness gracious. That is, again, the more the merrier when it comes to stats. But you've got to be able to give the people doing the games the ability, you know, whether it's a writer or broadcaster or whatever, to figure out, and a manager, to figure out what's applicable and what isn't. I mean, I remember during the great MVP debate when Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown. He's the first Triple Crown winner since Carl Yastrzemski in 1967. And for the uninitiated, the Triple Crown is leading the league in home runs, runs batted in, and batting average. It rarely has happened. In fact, it hasn't happened in the National League since 1937 when Joe Medwick did it. So Cabrera wins the Triple Crown, but Mike Trout, as usual, puts together an absolutely phenomenal season. Phenomenal. Because Mike Trout is a great player. And the debate was between Cabrera, the Triple Crown winner, traditional, versus the new wave sabermetrics that show that Trout's the better player. And one of them they kept using over and over again was, of course, one of the metrics, many metrics I really like. One I just think is just beyond the pale of stupidity is wins against replacement. War. They're talking about his war numbers here versus Cabrera. And I remember I had one of the guys that does analytics on the show. And I asked him, I said, so you're telling me, I said, that Mike Trout's war number is whatever it was. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, no, it's unbelievable. It's off the charts. And I said, so you're telling me that the Angels, who finish 8 games below .500, if they were to lose Trout, they'd finish 18 games below .500. Of course, I heard nothing on the other end for a moment. He said, well, I mean, I said, no. I said, you're telling me that if the Angels finish 8 games below .500 and he doesn't play, they're going to finish 18 games below .500. Well, yeah, they're not going to be as good. I said, well, I said, no offense. I can tell you that just by watching the game. I don't need a number. I said, meanwhile, this guy over here won the Triple Crown and his team won the division. I said, do they win the division and make the playoffs without him? Well, that's not the point. I said, no, that is the point. I said, I vote for him as the MVP because his team was able to win the division, and if he's not in the lineup, they're not. Well, with him in the lineup, they're 8 games below .500. Without him, they'd be 18. I said, to be honest with you, what's the difference? I think it's the last time we had him on the show. I thought I was just asking good questions. I wasn't trying to be rude. But I actually watched the games. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.